Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome in Rose City to Soccer Made in Portland. Ryan Clark here with Chris Reifer. A lot of rumors jumping about on the old interwebs. It's full on silly season here in Timbersland.
So it's not silly season. It is actually the regular season. I just want to clear this up. It is not silly season. That was like 2 months ago.
That's fair.
It is actually the season. It is just the season, not silly season.
Maybe a little extension of silly season into the real
like Orthodox
season.
Silly season or something like that, right? like you know how that's like a few weeks after like you know the Christmas when most folks in modern day celebrate it. This is Orthodox silly season. I'll give you that, but it is actually the season.
Right. And so there is silliness happening, obviously the biggest story right now.
A lot of silliness though.
Yeah, is Germán Bertarame. Who is looking to probably stay with Monterrey based on the most recent reporting, but the Timbers are making a full court press to try and get him to Portland. $15 million activating his release clause, but in the negotiations right now, at least according to the most recent reporting out of Mexico from Cesar Luis Merlo, he is more than likely going to stay with Monterrey. The Timbers are making a final push to try and convince him to come to Portland, but it doesn't seem that the interest there, at least on the part of Bertarame, is terribly strong at this point, given maybe where the negotiations are at. And I mean, they took a big swing with him, and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. If it does, then whoa, this is a big moment, and it would obviously be a club record transfer if they do pull it off. But your backup option here in Cabecita Rodriguez, who for all intents and purposes seems to be packing his bags and getting ready to come to Portland based on all the reporting we've seen there, that's a pretty darn good, you know, option, as we talked about last week. But Chris, just your thoughts on this saga that has, of course, played out with a lot of misinformation on social media over the last few days and weeks with Bertarame.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of junk on social media, speculation about his motivations and all of that kind of stuff. But the reality is the guy's just making a decision. I mean, it sounds like it's basically just down to him and the guy's making a decision. And, you know, Merlo, whom you cited with the recent report, is a very good journalist, and so he is well sourced. And it wouldn't surprise me if he does through his channels have some insight into this. And so, you know, I think it is reasonable to give that some weight. But there's been a lot of stuff out there that's sort of, you know, gone back and forth about whether he's going to come, whether he's not going to come, yada yada yada. The guy's just going to make a decision, and you know, you've got to think that it's a decision that the Timbers would have liked to have been taken. When was the 7 to 10 days over? Like 6 days ago. You know, they probably would have liked it if the decision had been taken earlier. You would think it's going to be made fairly soon, but we've been saying that for a little while. So that, I mean, that's kind of just where we're at. My thoughts on the swing for Bertarame, I agree with you, it's good that the Timbers are taking a big swing. I think a few things about this, you know, I don't think Bertarame is a $50 million player. He's a good player. Don't get me wrong. He's a really good player. He's one of the best strikers in on the continent, right? So, you know, I think he is very much the type of player who is worth making a big push for.
Yeah, and he's in his prime. Like he's fully like the type of player that could be like an MVP caliber player in MLS, like right away.
Yeah, 25 years old, you know, and I think he would come in and would be, you know, a very, very good MLS player, and could be for several years. And so it makes sense to make a big push for him. I think this represents an overpay, but it also probably represents what the Timbers need to do to try to have a meaningful shot at a guy like that right now. But there is something to be said about what that says about the Timbers, and you know, their ability to use the non-monetary factors to draw in and to attract players. You know, if they're putting a huge amount of money for on the table for a guy, probably more than frankly his on-field production would warrant, and he's still not interested, I think that says something. And I think there are lots of factors that go into that. I think the team has not been super competitive. I think there is probably a reasonable amount of just sort of sporting caution about signing up with the Timbers project right now. They haven't even made the playoffs the last 2 years, new coach, all of that. Reasons for optimism, but also reasons for, you know, wanting to see if this is an outfit that's going to be able to punch in a higher weight class than they have the last couple of years. I think turf at Providence Park for a lot of people is certainly, when you get into this class of player, certainly going to be a factor.
Yeah, and he actually got injured at Providence Park on the turf.
And you know, I mean, if it's fair to look, anytime somebody gets injured on grass, everybody's like, "Oh, he's so unfortunate." Anytime somebody gets injured on turf, they're like, "Oh my gosh, the turf."
Yeah. And you know, the discussion is important, and a lot of players don't like it, but you know, the statistics are, in fact, kind of murky on that front too. So we can't just, you know, blanketly say that it leads to more severe injuries. It does definitely get your boots stuck depending on the type of boots that you wear, but it is a factor.
There are mechanisms of injury that it can contribute to. That is also true with different kinds and qualities of grass surfaces. I mean, I think the data on injuries and turf is mixed and more nuanced than I am qualified to go into. But there's no question that there is a fairly strong preference among the player community, and this is true both in men's and women's soccer, for playing on grass. And frankly, I'm not in any position when players say, "Boy, playing on turf regularly takes more of a toll on my body." I'm not in any position to say that's not true. You know, they know a heck of a lot better than I do. And so, you know, it just is a factor for players, whether rightly or wrongly. It is a factor. Frankly, it's a factor that the Timbers have had in their ability to control for a number of years now, basically since Portland State football moved out of Providence Park. It has been a thing that they could get done. Yes, there are barriers and there are difficulties with it. Finding the Thorns of practice facility is an important one. Should have done that years ago. You know, there are engineering difficulties and all of that stuff, but those are all surmountable things. But for the last 7 or 8 years, they've been surmountable and they haven't done it. And so, you know, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and feel sorry for them if that's a factor in their ability to attract players. Because, I mean, that's at this point, it's just a choice that they've made.
Yeah. And it's part of a larger picture too, for him in all likelihood too, right? Like, part of the issue I think that they face as well, and one that maybe could have, you know, stopped PTFC in their tracks earlier on in the process, is the idea, and this was reported by Merlo, that Mexican citizenship for Bertarame is a big aspect of this, right?
He wants to play for the national team.
He wants to play for the Mexican national team and would definitely get that opportunity in all likelihood. So, you know, that's a massive piece, and maybe they could work it out still where he comes in the summer and in the period between now and then he gets it done. But any country's immigration and naturalization system is going to be complicated. We don't even know really how far along in that process, if at all, he is. But that's a big deal, and it's just infinitely easier for him to do something like that if he's playing professionally in Mexico. So that's a big aspect too. But yeah, I mean, the turf is absolutely a consideration for somebody like this, whether he has said it explicitly or not. He himself has gotten injured on this very specific surface that he would be playing on regularly. That's a piece of it. The money might not line up either. Like, they're paying a whopping fee to get him.
I think the money's pretty good. I think the money is probably the thing that gets the Timbers salary, in the door.
But the salary for him, like, who knows whether that lines up with what he desires and if he's maybe using this opportunity as leverage with Monterey, right? Like,
that the Timbers are offering him a significant raise. And I think the question is whether Monterey is going to be able to come up enough to sort of make that work.
Yeah.
And to convince him to stay. So I think all of those things are factors. But yeah, I mean, these are all things that you consider. But at the end of the day, there are many factors that go into all deals like this, right? They're not always the same, but there are a lot of factors that go into deals like this. And it's the job of the Timbers, and it's the job of the Timbers front office and Ned Grabovoy to get these deals done. And other teams have. The Timbers haven't, and it looks like they'll be able to do it with Cabecito, which is I think a good signing. And it's heartening that the Timbers are willing to put this kind of money on the table, but Cabecito isn't this sort of level of deal. And I think in light of the history of the last two off seasons, it is fair to look at sort of the overall kind of performance of the Timbers front office and say that they have established a reputation for overpromising and under-delivering. And so the reason that I mean, frankly, maybe the biggest factor in making the Cabecita deal interesting is that it would sort of keep open the option for bringing in a young DP in the summer or maybe next winter.
Yeah. Like if you've set aside like 15 to 20 million, you're talking about once the Cabecita thing is done. And if you pay 7 or 8 for him, for example, if that's what the number ends up being,
shouldn't be 7 or 8 still, but
sure.
I digress.
But you know, even if you do slightly overpay, you're budgeting, you know, whatever that number is, you still have 10 or 12 million to work with for somebody that could be a legitimate, like, young star, right? Somebody that as a young DP could come in, immediately contribute and be a very profitable sell player.
But can they actually identify and sign that guy?
Yeah. Have they identified them too? Have the resources sort of been directed primarily and the attention directed primarily at these two big potential signings in Cabecita, obviously being the one that might actually come through, but has that person been identified for the near term?
And even if they can identify him, can they sign him? Because this is a front office that has overpromised and undelivered the last two off seasons.
Yeah.
And I mean, do you have faith in them to be able to get these kinds of big, complicated, difficult deals actually across the line? And I think there's reasonable doubt about that. I can't sit here and say, yes, absolutely, they can do it, because frankly, they just haven't. And so, you know, in many ways, that is another takeaway from sort of this back and forth with Bertarame. If they're not able to get that signing across the line, it does. I mean, it sort of opens up opportunity for the future, but it creates questions about whether they have the organizational prowess that they need to seize that opportunity. And I don't know the answer to it.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there are still discussions happening right now in Cincinnati. Obviously, Rayados is in Cincinnati right now, and Bertarame is expected to play tonight. We're recording this on Thursday, so tonight he's expected to play. I would imagine that some folks from your friendly neighborhood Timbers are there right now trying to perhaps desperately to get this deal to work out, but it is looking like it's trending the wrong direction in that sense. But talking about Cabecita, I mean, he's a guy that's on the wrong side of 30, so that's a setback.
Yeah, but just barely,
and somebody who I think is still at the tail end of their prime as a striker, and somebody who has shown themselves to be a lethal finisher, and would be a great addition, somebody that would be your starting striker that I think, given his skill set, pairs well with a guy like Evander in the attack. So nothing to sneeze at by any stretch, and could very well come in and be Portland's best player.
Yeah. Good signing. I think he's been a little bit out of favor with América, and that's why he's available. And there's no shame in that. You know, America is one of the three or four deepest teams in North America, right?
Especially at his position, right? Henry Martin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah, they've got Henry Martin, who, like, I've actually never been a huge fan of. That's something that me and Eltree fans share.
I actually signed him to the Timbers in a FIFA, like,
how'd that go?
Franchise. Oh, he dominated. He had like 30 goals. But
wow. Okay. Well, maybe they should go after him.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a team where they've got a lot of attacking tools, and so going after the player who might be a little bit out of, you know, sort of out of the top level of the rotation of that kind of that deep of a rotation makes a lot of sense. That's an attainable deal, and you can get a player who's pretty good. I expect if they sign Cabecita that he's going to come in and be a pretty darn good player. I don't know if he's going to be a best 11 level player like I think they absolutely would have been banking on with Bertirame. But I would expect him to be a really meaningful, significant addition to the Timbers attack, and it would sort of keep that option at least open for the future. He also has enough positional flexibility, sort of like Bertirame, to play in a couple different spots. And so if Felipe Mora is on a heater, you can play Mora and Cabecita at the same time, move Cabecita to the wing, Mora up top, and go that way. And so, you know, I think in a lot of ways that signing makes a lot of sense. And I think if we'd started the offseason from sort of, yeah, we're going to, you know, go sign a DP attacker this offseason and try to keep some powder dry for another big signing in one of the next two windows, you'd look at this Cabecita signing and say, hey, that's all right. Like, good. Like, job done. But that's not where we started. That's not, frankly, where we even were a week ago or 7 to 10 days ago or wherever. And you know, so it's going to feel like a miss. It's going to feel like they swung and missed on their biggest offseason ambition again.
Yeah, and it's expectation setting too, right? When you're going around saying we're not bleeping around, talking about having multiple signings that could be the biggest in team history, that's kind of dangerous, frankly, territory for hyperbole. And on top of that, like, do the work in the offseason, which is something that you have talked about repeatedly on this podcast, the idea of not building the plane while in flight. So
if you're having this conversation in December and you're sort of having this back and forth in December, it's a very different conversation than if you're doing it in March. And I don't have a problem with the Timbers making big statements of intent in terms of not bleeping around, not ducking around or clucking around or whatever you want to be doing, in terms of making these kinds of signings. I have no problem with that. My problem is with not being able to back it up and not being able to actually not cluck around, and getting those big swing deals across the line. I think that's the bigger concern. And so, you know, I mean, we'll see how it plays out. There's no crystal ball. We could yet have another twist or turn in this saga. There have been a few already. And Bertirame could be here next week and we could be recording a totally different podcast. As it looks right now, I think that's the question that this raises. Great. They have the you know, if they go with Cabecita, they have the resources to take another big swing. But can they actually hit? Or is Ned Grabovoi going to be, you know, spinning around at home plate, having had a fastball thrown by him yet again?
You know who has been clucking around a little bit, probably too much these days, is the folks that are crossing the picket line and officiating Major League Soccer games.
That was a shoot show.
That was a shoot show for the kids at home. We can talk obviously about the result of the game and the mismanagement on the part of the Timbers and everything that led to the result, but I would like to start there because it was so blatant and such a poor example of why MLS's position on this issue has just been untenable and frankly abhorrent.
Frankly, I don't care about MLS's position on this issue because everything MLS says publicly is just obviously geared toward is writing for a different audience, right? Everything they say publicly is designed to try to help them at the negotiating table.
Yeah.
And so like it bears no relationship to reality, as we all saw this last weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
reality,
so who cares
was
what they say.
Reality was a mess on Saturday. I mean, that the Timbers and DC United are both lucky, not only that that didn't lead to major injury for either of them, but that it also didn't lead to the result of the game hanging in the balance of people that were frankly not living up to the moment, people that did not appear ready to officiate a professional soccer match in stretches of that game. It was embarrassing, you know, when MLS is trying to sell its product to the world, right? And to say, oh, look, we're improving. This is a good product. This is an exciting product. You know, there's stuff other than Messi and friends happening here. This flies in the face of that pretty significantly and is not a tenable position to be in. There are people that are going to get hurt because of this. There's games and results and team fortunes that are going to inevitably and have already changed. You know, the Philadelphia Union experienced that recently. So it's just not tenable. And there was a lot of different examples throughout the game that we could get into, but it was just so consistent on both ends that it's hard to pick just one.
Yeah. And this wasn't a matter of bias. It was just a referee who didn't have the training experience to be able to call a game like that. It was a hard game to call too. We can talk about sort of how the game played out in a little bit, but it was a hard game to call in fairness. But that's why you have professional referees. I mean, that's why you have these folks who the league has invested a lot in the last few years in getting them sort of up to a higher standard.
Folks who are not perfect in their own way either,
no,
and who
of course
face
not, because
a
the
lot
referees,
of criticism.
I mean, that's just how it goes. Yeah. That's part of the nature of the job. And some are, I think, better than others, and all of that. But like, it's a hard job, and you had an especially hard game to call just because of the nature of the way it played out. And you had a referee who just wasn't up to that task. Period. MLS needs its first choice referees back. I hope they reach a reasonable compromise with PRO to get them back on the field with the compensation that the referees deserve, given the additional stressors that have been placed on them with a really rapidly growing league. I mean, we don't talk about that, but like, there are so many more games to referee in MLS now than there were 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And that has put additional stressors on the referees who are being asked to call more games, who are being asked to turn around more and do, you know, center referee duty one day and then fourth official duty the next. And it's more games for ARs, and it's all of that. And, you know, and so it's as the league grows, so have the demands on the referees. And I'm sure that's a big part of why the referees are saying, hey, we deserve a little bit bigger slice of the pie. And, you know, I don't sort of want to weigh into, frankly, negotiations that I don't know much about, and who is being reasonable and who is not. But the point is, MLS needs to come to a reasonable compromise with them in light of all those factors, because what we've seen on the field takes away from the soccer that, you're right, MLS is very much trying to convince everybody is a product worth going to watch.
Yeah, not just investing in as a business product, but going to watch, supporting, and caring about. Something that maybe gets caught, you know, by the wayside a little bit in this whole discussion about how this league continues to grow. But the game, let's talk about the game. The Timbers go up 2-0. Early goal from Dairon Asprilla, which was exciting for him, included a celebration where he put up two sort of goggles toward a box that may or may not have included Ned Grabovoi in what has started to become a little bit of a beef right now with contract type negotiations that I believe are happening behind the scenes. Jeremy Peterman wrote a great story after that game, just about everything that went on in that shoot show of a game. And part of that discussion was about Dairon. Talk about a guy that has been a workman-like mentality since he came to Portland, and they even shared it on the Timbers social media. He is one of only two people to score multiple goals in every season of Timbers soccer. Or maybe he's the only one now that I'm thinking about it, since obviously, yeah, other than
I think he was with Valerian
in a certain number of seasons, maybe not every season, but I digress. That was the early goal, and then Moreno scores the other one. Bit of an up and down game for Moreno. He had a goal and the assist to Espria, and was effective in spots, but toward the end, really struggled and was a big reason why a lot of their stuff didn't build up.
I'm not going to put any of that on any one player.
No, but up 2-0, the bigger issue being the tactical shift that Phil Neville made in about the 68th minute, I want to say.
Maybe a little earlier than
63
that.
To 65 yeah. area, where he brought in Zupric and went for three in the back, and sort of had Mosquera as one of the wing backs and Antony theoretically as one of the other wing backs. And the theoretically is very heavy there, because he was not anywhere near sort of a defending position for a good stretch of that. And tactically and positionally, it just fell apart. And it was, you watch what happened. It was frankly, clearly to anybody, whether they be a casual viewer or an analyst or whatever, that it caused those two goals to happen, that the Timbers dropped that result in large part because of that tactical mistake. And, people were pretty upset about that and had a lot of questions about that decision. It's one thing to, I guess, experiment with different tactics. It's another for players to be prepared to execute them, as you pointed out when you and I talked about it after that game. So your perspective then on that decision and the result that sort of happened as a result.
You know, it was an interesting game because you had two coaches for the two teams who were both new to their teams. Trelissane, first year with DC United after coming from the interim job with the Red Bulls. We got the Red Bulls to the postseason last year, sort of pulled them out of their tailspin. Didn't get the permanent job in New York, which was a little bit of a controversial decision. DC United jumped on that opportunity and brought him in. And the Timbers, of course, hired Phil Neville over the course of the offseason. DC dictated the game tactically from start to finish. That DC United team, especially without Christian Benteke, who went out in warmups with an injury, is not nearly as talented as the Timbers are. And I think the Timbers for the first hour did a decent job of handling the pressure that DC was imposing, which was basically everywhere across the field. They were really, really, I mean, sort of in kind of Red Bull fashion, they were really sort of coming out to muck up the game. And they did a good job of it. And the Timbers did a good job of finding, nonetheless, a couple opportunities. They, especially when they would go out on the wing, Antony got pretty well cooked by Aaron Herrera on his side. But Santi Moreno was the one doing the cooking on the other side. And they did a good job of finding enough moments where they could get those, you know, where they could sort of break the press and get somebody like Santi in space, or where Santi could create space for himself to nonetheless be in a position to win the game, despite the fact that DC United had really dictated things from a tactical perspective, basically from the jump. And then in the 60th minute, the Timbers made a move that I think conceptually makes some sense. Feels a little bit early, but I also think Eric Williamson was probably on a minutes limitation. And so they had to make some move. The number of options on the bench was relatively limited. And so given all that, like, I actually don't fault Phil Neville conceptually for wanting at that point to go to a three in the back and you know, for lack of a better term, to bunker a little bit. And ideally, you would say bunker and counter a little bit. But to want to do that, because that's kind of what the game state called for, even if it was probably 10 or 15 minutes earlier than you would want to do it otherwise. So I get the concept. I understand what they're trying to do. But it was crystal clear that when they went from the four in the back that they started to the three, which is just, it's just a different shape. And it's going to be a little bit different system. Guys are going to have different roles. And the coach's job, this is literally the coach's job, is to make sure that everybody understands what their roles are, in it, including those changes. It was crystal clear that basically across the board, the Timbers did not understand what their roles were when Phil Neville changed the system in at about the hour. And that's not a good moment for Phil Neville. It is early. And yes, he hasn't been with the team for a long time, but he's been with the team for the same amount of time that Troy Lesane's been with the team. And they understood their roles. They understood what they were doing, frankly, in a way that's a little bit hard to play. When you're pressing like that, you have to be really well coordinated, because if your press is just a little bit easy to break, the dam can break and it can blow up on you. And so that's a hard way to play. And DC United was ready to play the way Troy Lesane wanted them to play. They were ready to play even when they started pushing the game a little bit more with the ball as opposed to against the ball when they're down 2-0. They were ready to do that. The Timbers were totally unprepared to do what Phil Neville wanted them to do in the last half hour of the game. And that ultimately boils down to Phil Neville. I think there are definitely individual moments that you can look at and say, boy, that's not a good moment from that player. But like, when you step back and you look at, is that not a good moment because that player is not a good player? Or is that not a good moment because that player doesn't understand what they're supposed to do in that moment?
Right. Yeah. You look at the wing backs, especially like Antony out of position.
When are they passing off? When are they rotating with D mids? When are they letting an attacker go through to a center back? I mean, those are the things that change in a four when you move to a three.
Yeah. And Mosquera especially was
no clue.
He was not ready for that. And that's surprising, honestly, from him especially. It's less surprising from Antony because naturally he isn't somebody that really ever drops back into that sort of position. But Mosquera is a guy who has been slotted as sort of a wing back type of player, but he looked similar to Antony, like he was a winger out of position there. And that's been a big criticism of him. He's somebody like that, you know, the Timbers have talked about as a big sell player down the road who's got attention from Europe and everything. But lately, I don't know if in at the tail end of last year or in the early part of this year, he's lived up to that sort of expectation. But the larger issue, yes, is obviously the preparation on the part of Phil Neville of his players and the ability to identify where they need to be. And there was clearly, it wasn't just the wing backs. There was a lot of guys that seemed a little bit, you know, a step slow or confused.
Where is the line going to be set up? How much space are you going to have between your central midfielders? Basically, had three defensive central midfielders in the game, between your central midfielders and your back line. In other words, how much space are you going to have between the five level and the three level? How are you going to deploy those wingbacks? Are you going to ask them to stay high and to pass defenders early, either to a D mid who's rotating over or to your outside center back? Or are you going to ask them to tuck in and play almost a little bit more like fullbacks? These are all the questions that the Timbers had no answers to at all. They didn't know what the answers to these questions were. And that ultimately is why this game can be summed up in the fact that Troy Lesane took Phil Neville out back and beat him. And that's why the Timbers dropped points to a team that they had no business dropping points to at home.
Yeah.
And that's just not good. That's not good enough from Phil Neville. And he's going to have to be a lot better if the Timbers are going to be good. Otherwise, we're headed in the same direction that we were headed the last couple of seasons.
Yeah. The sort of middling that they do not want.
Middling is a generous characterization.
Yeah. Low middling maybe is where a lot of it was.
Below middling.
Slightly or further below middling. wherever they fall on that spectrum. Yeah. I mean, it definitely has to be better on the part of preparation. And what an indictment, too, of the Colorado Rapids that game was, too, right? Because you think about the absolutely abysmal first 45 that Colorado played against Portland. They made the Timbers look like world beaters in that first game. And there was a slew of positivity on our last podcast, but there also were questions about, you know, being able to bottle that up and maintain the consistent level of ability with the ball at their feet. There were flashes, I think, of that in this DC game. Those two goals were not aberrations. I think that they showed some of the strong moments that they had against Colorado and played in the similar way that they did, but they didn't finish the job. And that was a hallmark of like the last 2 years under Gio, right? Is the ability to maybe show those flashes, but then suddenly you seize up and you get beat tactically. And that's exactly what happened against a DC team that, yeah, you got to get those 3 points. You up 2-0 on DC United at home early in the season, trying to pick up points, much harder stretch ahead with several games on the road coming up. That those are 3 points that you're going to look back on at the end of the season. You know, 32, yeah. 32 out of the 34 games are left.
They will finish the season with two fewer points than they should have.
Yeah. Yeah.
We know that
so far.
That's in the books.
Yeah. So like the next one for the Timbers, you know, they were at home these first two against Colorado and DC. Saturday they play at NYCFC. And then the following Saturday they play at Houston.
Really, really, really favorable opening schedule for the Timbers.
Yeah.
And I mean, and basically you have two non-playoff teams coming to Portland to start the season in Colorado and DC United. They took 4 points out of those two games. Okay. I mean, you would like six. Frankly, if you're a playoff team, you'd probably say we want 6 points out of those two games. Four, not a disaster. NYCFC has been a shoot show of their own right. They've been bad. They have not scored a goal yet. Two games in, they're 0 goals to the good and 3 to the bad. After losing 2-0 to a St. Louis team last year that I think a lot of folks are expecting to take a step back this year. And then Houston has been struggling quite a bit, is also sort of in the position of building the plane mid-flight, and also has been juggling CONCACAF competition. And has been struggling to do so. So, I mean, all four of these games, frankly, are really winnable for the Timbers. And now they've got to go on the road and they've got to do it. And games on the road tend to be more complicated and more game statey from a tactical perspective than games at home. And that didn't go well last week. So, I mean, a big task for Phil Neville to get the team into a position, because they should be looking at these games like these are games where we should be looking to get points out of. If they come back with no wins from these next two, huge disappointment.
Yeah, and tactics and preparation travel, right? It's the idea that if you are maintaining this consistent level of play and a tactical approach that works and adjusts when necessary and that sort of thing, it's going to travel. We saw so often over the last couple of years, but particularly last season, where things would just sort of fall apart on the road. And that road game at Houston, in fact, was the straw that broke the camel's back, and Gio Savarese got fired afterwards last year. 5-0 was that one.
It was not a competitive 5-0.
No, it was not. It could have been
like
worse.
Some 5-0s are closer than that one. That was not one of the close 5-0s.
Right. And so four of the next five are on the road for the Timbers. That NYCFC game, Houston, come back home for the Philadelphia game, and then two games on the road at Vancouver and Sporting KC, also both winnable. Vancouver, probably the toughest one out of those four road games. But that Philadelphia game is interesting. I am taking a trip to the Far East, where I will be traversing through South Korea and Japan.
That's fun.
So that's going to be fun. Going to do that with my brother, Jesse. Never been to Asia, so very excited for that travel. For that game, I plan to be at the PDX Tap Room in Shibuya, Tokyo, to have a Portland beer and watch the Portland Timbers play the Philadelphia Union. So any listeners of this podcast who might be part of the Timbers Army supporters group that is out there in Tokyo, hit me up.
I'll be there. That's my plan. So we'll see you guys there. A fun little aside, but nonetheless, this the schedule ahead for the Timbers is something they have to take advantage of. And you know, if they can bottle up what they've done well so far and try to foment some consistent performances, then they can get off to a really strong start here and put themselves in an opposite position to what Timbers fans are accustomed to over the last few years, which is slow starts and clawing back. You don't want to be in that spot, especially when the new DP arrives, whether that's Cabecita or somebody else, probably Cabecita. You want to be in a rhythm so they can just plug right in and make things better for you.
And you also need to get points early in the season, especially when your early season schedule is really soft. Because if you don't, we know what happens. It turns into a world of hurt. Even if you play well in the summer and in the fall, you can fall woefully short of any reasonable goals.
No major thorns news this week, but there was a whole heck of a lot of thorns playing through
the water park
last night in the U.S. versus Canada Gold Cup game. Both sides had plenty of thorns, former and current, on the roster. Sophia Smith scores a goal that was awesome through the water, and then U.S. wins in penalties, including Soph getting a little redemption pen after all that criticism from the World Cup. So the U.S. advances, Canada and Jesse Fleming go down.
Fleming was pretty good in this game.
Yeah.
Adriana Leon, old friend. Adriana Leon had a really nice game for Canada.
Yeah, super late goal there.
And really set up their first equalizer in the 81st or 82nd minute.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about another shoot show, this was another shoot show, and it was a classically CONCACAF shoot show.
Yeah.
The field in San Diego, for those who didn't watch, was totally waterlogged. It had just been blasted with rain for the several hours before the game, to the point where there was standing water throughout the game on the field. The U.S.'s first goal came from a back pass from Canada that went about 8 feet because it basically was just kicked into a puddle.
Yeah.
And Jaden Shaw jumped on it and scored. I mean, it was that. And there were multiple plays like that, not necessarily that resulted in goals, but there were multiple plays like that where you look at the play and you're like, this is nothing to do with soccer. This is just
water polo.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. It's ridiculous. Then the ball looked like a water polo ball at times where it just like get kicked and then it would just like stop on a dime with a splash. And sometimes like players would like skim it off the grass. It was wild. I will note that in all my years of watching soccer at Providence Park in its modern configuration in the last 13 years, I've never seen the surface anywhere near as bad. And yet, for the last 11 years, Providence Park has been blackballed from hosting U.S. men's and women's national team games. I'll just note that as a fact. People can do with that fact what they want. But nonetheless, the ban continues. Portland is out. And we're instead going to go down and play in a swimming pool in San Diego.
It's a swimming pool that's got grass at the bottom. CONCACAF
probably the primary culpret here. The game shouldn't have been played last night. I mean,
yeah,
it was
no, it was definitely terrible. Not. Yeah, that was so dangerous.
That surface was not suitable for what should have been a pretty high-level soccer game. There's nothing to take out of it other than it was great to see Soph get a goal. It has been a challenging 6 or 9 months for her. And so to see her get a goal, hopefully to like start to get some of that confidence back, I think is very good news for the Thorns.
Yeah. And we're only a couple of weeks away from NWSL season. So we're getting up close there.
And Sam Coffey getting the start too.
Yeah. Yeah. And good for Sam. I mean, geez, like it's long overdue there. And I'm sure that those opportunities are going to continue for her because she's one of the best sixes in the world. So.
Yeah, and she's starting to show it and starting to get that respect from the national team, which is good. Hopefully that continues as Emma Hayes comes in and this long sort of stuck in the mud transition comes to a close. the stuck in the mud transitions is just what U.S. soccer does, right?
And we literally dither
for a year and then finally figure out the coaching situation. That there is finally some light at the end of the tunnel there. But hopefully it continues under Emma Hayes that Coffey's talents continue to get recognized and she continues to get selections.
For sure. We will make an effort to get a Portland Thorns season preview out before that opener against the Kansas City Current. The challenge, of course, being that I depart next week for this this little vacay. But you can definitely bank on some discussion ahead of the Thorns season from us or half of us that are currently sitting here. We'll see. But either way, that'll wrap it up for us on Soccer Bay in Portland this week. For Chris Reifer, I'm Ryan Clark. Follow us on Twitter, Ryan T. Clark, Chris Reifer, Soccer Bay in PDX. Like, subscribe, leave reviews. Happy to get all sort of reviews. I have been heartened by the volume of reviews we've gotten lately. Glad that some of them are 5-star reviews and are positive, but also constructive criticism is good too. We've gotten some of that as well from the listeners, and we love that. So, but if you want people to keep listening to this podcast and you want the podcast to continue, basically, we always prefer a nice little hug, a nice 5-star review, a pat on the back from our fathers, also known as our listeners, is always good. It's important. There may have been some layers to that request, but I digress. We'll see you next week.